welcome to the Behind the Story podcast for a special International Women's Day episode. Joining me today is Labour MP Jess Phillips. Hello. And writer, poet, and business owner Salma El-Wadani.
Hello.
Today we're going to be talking about everyone's favourite bad guy, social media, and whether it's been a force for good in female empowerment. So, Jess, as a women's rights activist and campaigner, what would your view on this be? Has it been a force for good or bad?
I think that it's been both a force for good and bad. The obvious downsides are the ones that get talked about a lot. So the higher likelihood of women being abused than men on social media, that women who have a platform and lots of women who don't have a platform but might dare to venture an opinion on social media can have their heads knocked off very, very easily by an angry crowd. But that said, the amount of solidarity that has been formed by people being able to reach, certainly globally, women being able to talk to each other on a global platform has provided huge and changing effects to women's activism. Obviously the Me Too movement being the most obvious and recent example, but by no means the only one, where people felt for the first time that all over the world people had solidarity with them and could understand their experiences. And it actually stripped away your sort of borders, where you live and or what class you were from or all of those things, and just was the same everywhere that it appeared. Admittedly, not so much in the non-English speaking world, but everywhere the stories were the same, and that made women feel an immense amount of solidarity. How much a hashtag changes things is yet to be seen, I think, in that instance. But it, really, I feel like, actually, on balance, I'd say it's a force for good.
Oh, thanks. And Sam, I know you've got quite a unique perspective on this in terms of your experience with
Spring. So ultimately, I'm going to agree with Jess that ultimately it is a force for good, but I think we have to remember that it is a force and it is moving us and it's changing, it's shifting the very fabric of our society. So I was fighting in the Egyptian Revolution. I was living over there at the time, and social media was the thing that 100% caused that revolution and enabled all of us to come down onto the streets, especially when you're living in a dictatorship in which so many channels are censored. So I can't look back on it and think that there's, you know, it wasn't. In the same way, though, I think, and this talks to what you were saying about kind of a global platform, there is so much in being a woman or in communities of womanhood that we don't talk about because silence has been our language for so long. So actually, social media then gives us a language. It gives us a global language to talk about things. And that hashtag in itself, that might have been shared in different countries, and those posts and those statuses might have been written in different languages, but that hashtag Me Too was always written in English, and that suddenly that hashtag is our global keyboard that we're now using. So I think that's incredibly important, and also I think the way we create revolutions has changed. So if you think back to the suffragettes and everyone taking to the streets, and whilst we still do physical protests in the streets, actually social media is our street now. That's the streets that we take to, and that's the way we create revolutions. So I think that's really important. And obviously there's so many negative things, and the abuse that women get, it far outnumbers and outcries that that men get.
Why do you think that is?
Patriarchy?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's loads, but I think fundamentally there's less accountability online, isn't there?
Yeah.
So actually, a lot of men wouldn't dare step to probably me or you and tell us something, or walk up to us and say, I'm going to rape you, but they can send that in my DMs because there's no retribution. There's no legislation that's kind of holding them accountable. And the social media platforms also don't either. And the way Instagram, for example, monitors and polices things. So if I post a nude photograph, or post something like with the word penis or dick in it, Instagram's algorithms pick that up and immediately take that down. So when I get penis pictures regularly, because you can never underestimate man's ability to, you know,
like its penis,
show it off to the world. But I get them almost daily, and what I took to doing was screenshotting them and then putting them on my story and tagging them tagging the person that sent them in it.
So that's amazing. That is amazing.
All my followers then see it, and then all my followers will report him and be outraged. But also just to show what goes on in private messages of women online, because no one sees that. They're the bits that no one sees. And I kind of want to show people, actually, this is happening to me every single day. I'm getting these pictures. And Instagram has every time I do that, Instagram time and time again picks up on it, sometimes within 3 hours, sometimes within 20 minutes, and they tell me I violated their community guidelines, and they take the picture down. I'm like, but there's nothing in your algorithm that's picking up this stranger sending it to me in the first place.
In the private message section.
Yeah, exactly. So the way these social media platforms are structuring their algorithms or policing their platforms is not in women's favour at all. It's constantly battered against us.
It's been designed by men.
Men, exactly.
Not just men, but men. All the big social media platforms were basically designed by men who have a sort of free speech, truther attitude where sort of like we don't want to stop free speech more than we don't want to stop men sending dick pics.
Yeah.
But the reason that women get so much backlash is because men can feel the power that we were talking about. They can feel that it... And not all men, obviously. I have to say that before I say everything. But though... Control and power and control is what violence against women and girls is always about, whether it's online or offline. Mm-hmm. And when people feel their control slipping away, they will use whatever they can to harness it back. And obviously we see from violence against women and girls that that's often threats of violence, coercion, gaslighting, all of those things. And in reality, they can feel that we are using this to gain power and control over our own lives.
Just momentum. Yeah.
And so we must be... be pushed back.
And I know that last year in June you were very kind of vocal about the 600 rape threats you received in one evening. Since you've spoken out about that, have you found anything's got better?
I think actually things have got a bit better. I think that the media companies are slowly but surely coming round to the idea that they've got to do something about this, because we are a far bigger global market to them than, you know, people with dog pics as their avatar. It's a dog, isn't it? A dog.
Or just a silhouette.
Or another footballer, like a footballer, like that's not them. I'm like that, oh, he's actually quite nice, this horrible troll. And that, my husband's like, that's John Terry. so I find they're the worst. It is getting better. I have felt less under attack, and I don't know whether that's I've got better filters that Twitter have picked up on it. They have stopped some of the worst things. So they've stopped some of the dogpile things where you can, if you can block the whole conversation and you can mute something in a thread. But that was a fight to get them to do that. It didn't happen overnight. All of these new things that they talk about, that was because campaigners got in touch and kept going on. I've no doubt that they will change this algorithm about dick pics in your DMs.
I'm
literally going to put it to the Secretary of State.
Please
for
do. I can't DCMS. Take it anymore, honestly.
You know, these are all things that they eventually respond to their customer base. And like I say, we are a far greater global power for them.
Yeah.
But it's not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. It's still horrendous and creates a platform where a mob can attack
you. It's a mob mentality, isn't it? And we've created... And what social media does create is call-out culture online.
Yeah.
And it's very unforgiving. Yeah. And it's very uncompassionate. There's no space for failure. There's no space for human error.
People make mistakes.
All the time. But you're not allowed to online. You have to put forward this perfect image that everything you do is right. So... And they're going to come down harder on you if you're a woman. So if you slip up in any way, then you're cancelled. We have a cancelled culture.
You're either a total hero or you're in the bin.
Exactly. That is the culture that we live. There's no middle ground with social media at all. And then you have to think about the intersections you sit at as a woman. So I speak very visible about all my intersections. So I'm a woman, I'm a woman of colour, I'm Muslim. And I'm very vocal about all of those things. So the abuse that I get online isn't just because I'm a woman. It's because I'm a woman of colour. It's because I'm Muslim and I will post semi-nude pictures of myself. And that's outrageous to everyone. And how dare I? And I'm violating so many different boundaries. So you get abuse on so many different levels. It's not... There's not.
You're really spreading the net wide there for people to dislike you.
Yeah, just, you know, every trying. And so, yeah, you get lots of radical Muslims who are kind of, or just, I don't even know if radical is the right word. You get radical ones. You get just conservative ones who constantly ask me to stop calling myself Muslim, or they constantly tell. I get told I'm going to hell on a regular basis. I've got a ticket, apparently. By the way, everyone's talking about it. And then, you know, because, and then there's the cultural expectations of what I'm supposed to conform to, and it's a lot. And there's so many different ways to navigate it. And actually, is Instagram going to police anyone messaging me or commenting on one of my pictures that I'm violating a religion or that I'm going to hell? Probably not, because they're probably on their spectrum of kind of death threats and rape threats. It's probably not that high, and they don't know how to police that, and they've got an uncertainty. And bear in mind, these, like you said about these companies, they're controlled by generally white, cis, able-bodied men who don't sit at any intersections are probably the most privileged people in the world. And they're also the entrepreneurs that we've lauded up in our culture as these geniuses, and we've built up these huge tech companies very quickly from the ground up, given them absolute leeway, and now we're asking them to step inside awkward debates and where to control things and where the boundaries and the borders come in.
They have so much power. They are like governments.
They are, absolutely.
No, certainly the big four tech companies are like governments, and they can change an election. They can change so much. And so actually now they're going to have to face the scrutiny that governments face.
Yeah.
And they're going to have to enter into the... what, you know, it's such a quick evolution that they're going to go through, whereas democracy or not democracy or all those government systems that exist around the world have gone through millions of iterations and many difficult conversations. And the tech companies are nowhere near being able to cope with nuance. I mean, because we have a blame culture, and your cancel culture is nuance is not. I mean, somebody wrote to me on Twitter the other day and said, "Oh, Jess Phillips said something slightly nuanced, and we all had a go at her. This is why we're not allowed nice things."
Valid.
Yeah, it's true. Totally.
They do have all that power, and it's terrifying.
What would you say is the role of policymakers in this? Then what? Why do you think?
Well, I think that there's serious regulation. Gone are the days where we're talking about somebody going and dialing up the internet in the shared computer that they had in their house. My children watch YouTube, they watch internet videos on the TV that is in my living room. And if they were watching television on any of the main channels, everything that they viewed, I could feel confident as a parent that if there was something that wasn't right there, that I have somewhere to go. I can go to Ofcom and I can make a complaint. I know who the companies are. And my children are watching completely and utterly unregulated content on the internet, and some of it I have to genuinely unpick some of the thoughts and feelings that come out of it. And so it needs to be regulated. Yeah. Otherwise, it cannot exist. There needs to be clear stipulations. And it's the companies who provide the internet into our homes can stop them. Yeah. And actually, I think that lots of those, the sort of internet providers, your Sky, your Broadband, your BT, they are keen to have regulation because they recognise that when Sky is your TV provider, if your kid's just watching vicious porn on your television, they're actually
they've got some responsibility.
They've got some responsibility to that.
So
I think that we're now in a field where we need a proper sort of harms, risks, understanding regulator in this area.
Yeah, the chief executive of the NSPCC at the weekend said that child safety online cannot be left to social media companies after Instagram. So the grooming has trebled on Instagram.
I mean, why would anybody have thought that these were the institutions we wanted to... Yeah. You know, let's just let them have the police then as well. Hospitals. Go on, Mark Zuckerberg.
take
out my kidneys, why don't you? I mean, it's ridiculous. Why would anybody think that these massive corporate giants have our best interests at heart? Yeah. What a joke.
Yeah. I know we're talking about a lot about the negatives, but in terms of the positives...
We hate it. We did start off saying we were here for it.
It's like, totally love it.
Yeah.
Couldn't live without it.
What are some of the kind of best things that you've been able to do that have made the world a better place thanks to social media?
I mean, you can find people in a way that you couldn't. And as a policymaker, now, if I see someone in my constituency with a specific case, let's say a migrant woman who comes forward with a case of domestic violence and is herself then put in a detention centre because of her migrancy status, which has happened, and I have to know whether this was a problem with this case or is this a broader problem? And so I ask the world, and I have the opportunity to ask the world now. And so I constantly put out calls for evidence on policies where I feel that they need to change. And then when we've decided what needs to change because of the crowd, we will then we use that same crowd to have a continual conversation and to build the pressure. And actually, we live in an... I don't know how people 20 years ago, like, you know, I don't know how they built momentum for particular changes in the law, because I cannot imagine a thing where I wouldn't have a hashtag.
Signed a petition. It wasn't the same. It doesn't have the same impact,
although,
does it?
Petition culture, as a Member of Parliament who's the person who receives all those petitions. Love it. Totally love it.
I think... Yeah, one of the benefits for me is being able to not wait on the gatekeepers. So we get to, and especially as women, okay, we are not afforded access. We are not afforded platforms to speak on the things that we want to speak on. And actually, suddenly social media is a voice. It's the ability to create your own platform, to say your own things. Yeah. And like you said, build your own momentum about that. If I had waited for someone in publishing to sign me a book deal, I would still be waiting.
Yeah.
Because I don't have access to those worlds, and they kind of see me and they're like, nope, everything's pitted against me, right?
Yeah.
But actually then I just built my own audience online, and then we started the conversations we've all been dying to have, and then the publishers are like, actually,
there's people who want to have this
conversation. Can we talk to you? And I'm like, well, that's funny. So actually it shifts the power structure that's been in play for so many decades, and that's, I think that's one of the most incredible things about
it. If you were to include as well some of the group elements of social media, so your WhatsApps and your group chats on Facebook and Twitter, that has been amazing creator of spaces for women to converse in a safe space, a safe women's only space. That has led to huge changes, certainly in this building. But like, for example, in my constituency, there is a specific group with about, it must have about 400 Somali women on it. And it is only Somali women. And there was one of the women activists who works for me. She used it to talk to them about voting and about what their rights were and whether they would be able to, and whether they were registered. And the power that it's just giving those women that safe space to organise has been, it has been immeasurable for really marginalised groups. There is nothing I would do in my constituency with Muslim women, certainly, that wouldn't involve some sort of WhatsApp campaign.
Amazing. And as high profile politician, high profile journalist, the media and politicians are often the most subjected to this kind of abuse. What advice would you give to young female aspiring politicians, aspiring journalists who are afraid of using social media as a platform because of the abuse they could get?
So the thing that I always say is, as a writer, it's my job to elicit emotion. It's not my job to say whether that emotion is positive or negative. It's just my job to make you feel something. If you have spent 20 minutes writing this well-honed message in my DMs about how I'm going to hell or how all the things you want to do, I've elicited a reaction here and I've done my job. So my work here is done as far as I'm concerned. And so I also know that I've got a very thick skin, but those things don't bother me because I'm like, well, my job's done. If you feel complete apathy after what I've written, I failed somewhere along the way. If you're encouraging it or you're dead set against it, we are creating debate and we're creating conversation. And if you disagree, that's fine. So I think my advice is to those people that are going out there is remember why you're doing it and what you want to use that platform for. I always say to people who message me and say, I don't always agree with you or I think you're wrong on this, I'm like, that's fine. You're not here to agree with everything I say. Mm. We're here to change. We're here to have conversations and look at other people's perspectives. That's fine. If you've seen my perspective and I've seen yours, we don't have to agree. So really make sure you know why you're doing it and you know what you want social media to do for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. I mean, the trouble is that it's very easy for us to sit here and say, because we're both used to it. Yeah. And I don't know if I was always thick-skinned, but I can't remember a time when I didn't just think...
Yeah, likewise.
I won't swear, but basically, yeah, do one. but I'm sure there have been. I'm sure there was a time when I was like, whoa. But it. So it is very. I think that what you say is absolutely right. Say, don't say something for the sake of saying it. Know that using social media as a person with a public profile. Know that. Actually, although I sometimes talk about what I'm having for breakfast, that sort of frippery is absolutely fine and all well and good. But the reality is that if you're going to use it as a tool in your public platform, you've got to have something that you're sincerely saying. Mm. Because without sincerely saying something, you will get torn apart. I take a great sucker from the words of Katy Perry, that if you stand for nothing, you'll fall for everything. And if you
think
are
she
certain...
was the first one to say
yeah.
it.
Yeah, I like to think so. She certainly wasn't the first one to write an amazing song called Eye of the Tiger. There are greater...
True, great.
songs. But the, you know, really, if you've got something to say and you want to say it, expect some backlash, but that doesn't mean that what you've said is wrong.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It just means that the internet can be awful and that some people won't agree with you. Mm-hmm. Don't expect it always to be easy. You know, life isn't like Instagram.
Yeah, shockingly enough. I'd also say as well, because of the culture we've created around social media, if you're doing social media for followers, get off it and never touch it ever again. You have no right to be on it. It's going to mess you up. Avoid it at all costs. If at any point you start feeling like, oh, my followers dipped, leave it immediately, because you know you've blurred the lines.
Yeah,
definitely. But I think you're right, though. I'd rather people were sort of vitriolic. I don't like the abuse, but I'd rather people were vitriolic towards me than they were just like, meh.
Yeah, exactly.
I would really be sad if people were just like, I think nothing of her.
Yeah.
I would much rather they're like, I can't stand that Jess Phillips.
I'm like, because then it's also like, oh, it's shifting something in you. And what's that? And that's interesting.
Yeah,
and maybe it's just the beginning of something you're going to change your opinion on 4 years down the line.
Yeah. Who do you admire the most for their use of social media? So who do you follow and love and who's done great things for female empowerment?
I follow Kelechi. Do you know Kelechi? Kelechi Okafor? I follow her on Twitter. She's hilarious. She has something called Sally from HR. And she
sounds good.
This little cartoon woman, and she puts on this voice. Do you know who it is?
Yeah.
So she posts a video every week about Sally from HR, and it's Sally's complaining about, it's just all these microaggressions, basically, from the workplace, and it's hilarious. And it actually calls out the tiny things we forget to call out. It's really easy to get caught up in the big issues,
the groping,
and the big campaigns.
Yeah,
and he cornered me in the broom cupboard, but actually just the tiny sentences that people say to you that make you want to punch someone in the face, but no one else really noticed. And she does a really good job of calling that out. And I think she does amazing things for creating those conversations.
I often think it is the funny ones. On Instagram, I can't remember the woman's name, the woman who basically gets all pictures of people doing like ridiculous poses. And then like she redoes that. That's it. It's just like, that is so, I mean, I went and did a shoot for a magazine the other day and they literally genuinely made me hold my colour like that, and it is just like it is. I mean, the photo is amazing, don't get me wrong. Totally amazing, but
worth it. It
was totally worth it. Totally worth it. But you know, I felt her watching me. Because it is that idea, you know, like people like balancing stuff on their heads and like doing yoga poses.
Yeah.
And I think that's really brilliant, because actually it's sort of a homage to it as well. It's saying, you know, isn't it brilliant that you're out there doing this thing? But I am going to just poke fun at it.
Yeah.
I come from Birmingham where that your only really, really way of knowing that somebody loves you is if they take the piss out of you mercilessly.
Yeah.
And so I always take sort of mild ribbing as
flattery.
A real term of flattery and affection. I really like her, but you know, there are women who I have connected with on Twitter who are just, you know, constantly out there doing brilliant things. All of the pink protest young women who did the period protest that was, and they changed the law, that was entirely done on Twitter, and it was run by this you know, 17-year-old Asian girl. Yeah. It's just like, Jesus Christ, I was smoking fags on the back of the school when I was 17. You're amazing.
More aware now. But that's another thing of social media, aren't they? They are more aware and they've got more platforms to campaign in a way that we did. I was up a tree at 17 or something.
Also,
you know
they care much more about loads more things.
But because they've got more access, right?
Yeah,
we didn't have that access.
They see the world. I mean, my son, some of the things they say, it's outrageous. Like, like, oh God, I can't believe you're like out-feministing me because you've read it online somewhere. I'm like, oh, go away, woke bro.
Literally.
Finally, if you could stop one person from using social media ever again, who would it be?
Sometimes
and why?
Myself.
I have to say, I think that my husband would definitely answer that it should be me to stop it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, like we said, the obvious one is Trump and people who continually, you know, just say very, very naughty things online.
Yeah.
But probably for me, kind of fitness models, bloggers on Instagram who kind of secretly eat loads of cheeseburgers and then throw up and then are like, I went to the gym for 4 hours and I ate kale and this is why I look like that. I find that really irritating. Just let's cancel that.
Yeah, I hate it when anyone says, oh, I can just eat whatever I want and I still look like this. And I think, yeah, but you don't eat what I want.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't eat what I want, kale. Which is in one setting, four packets of biscuits. Yeah. So, you know, eat what I want and still look like that. I would say that actually the one thing that the companies have started to try and clamp down on is people with really far right views, say your Tommy Robinsons, and those who have used social media exactly as we have described because they couldn't find a platform, a reasonable platform anywhere else, and unfortunately have monetarised hate. So I would certainly stop Tommy Robinson and you know, Trump for the sake of the world.
And
I have to say,
sanity.
I find it incredibly amusing. I just cannot believe it's actually happening.
I know.
I have to read them out to my husband in the middle of the night and be like, look what he's
like an episode, isn't it?
But yeah, I'd say anyone who's there just to peddle hate and with no element of hope.
Yeah. That's great. Thanks so much. Thank you.
Thank you.
No worries, thanks.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to this episode. It was recorded on the night that we launched our dedicated women's practice, Empower, and it's the first in a series of podcasts and events that will be exploring ways in which we can further female empowerment. For more information, get in touch. You can tweet us at Higginson Tweets. See you next time.